Hello and welcome to Brexit Wise Podcast, episode 138. I'm your host, Malcolm Gallagher. In this issue, there'll be my Malcolm's monologue to start, followed by Hugh Morgan Williams' News Digest. Then for my call to action this week, I want to touch on a subject that I believe is underlying to your future success. It's a five-letter word that comes up time and time and again at the moment. It featured in the separation announcement of Bill Gates of Microsoft, and it featured in the BBC Martin Bashir and Princess Diana inquiry. It features daily in your business and in your personal life. What's the word? Well, it's in my piece later. And finally, we'll finish with our editorial piece, as always, Hugh's View. So, on with Malcolm's monologue. I've deliberately started this Malcolm's monologue across all our podcasts because it contains my personal opinion, which may not be the same as guests or other businesses or partners involved with us. In other words, I can get to say what I think. And this week, my thinking is about growth pains. Now, that's business growth pains. As you know, we talk to many businesses across the week for our BVTV network, as well as in my coaching activity. And there's an awakening amongst many that recovery or revival, as you may call it, is not going to be the same and not as plain sailing as everyone would like to believe. The world is undergoing increasingly rapid, unpredictable and unprecedented change. But to many businesses, too many have focused on short-term recovery, back to what they think will be smooth business conditions. That's not what their customers and buyers may be thinking. In this new and altered world, where the future is uncertain and change happens fast, you, if you want to achieve sustainable growth, need to know how you will manage those unpredictable threats or changes so you can be stronger and continue to grow. To do it, you need to be resilient. You need to know how to be resilient, to live that resilience, and importantly, to be able to evidence it, especially internally and externally to customers and buyers, suppliers and influencers. So why am I saying this? Well, one of the benefits of the extensive business and thought leader interviews that I do each week, and that's 6 or 7 hours of video each week, is that I get special insights. And also in my executive coaching and our BizVision soundboard service, I'm talking and helping leaders. And no matter the sector, the same common problems are around. If you don't get resilience in place, then your acceleration, we call it velocity at BizVision, your plans could come quickly unstuck because disruption is becoming more frequent and more severe. If I am a buyer, whether UK or overseas, looking at doing business with you, I'm thinking more than ever, risk. As expected, government is encouraging, nay pushing you, to seek new markets on the back of Brexit. But you need to be the wise supplier. And that's the name of one of my podcasts and our BVTV channel, The Wise Supplier. Be ready, be resilient. Okay, you say, but where do I start this resilience? Well, there are many models around, but my preference is the balanced scorecard approach, which we call ours BizPulse, with particular attention to 6 perspectives of your business. Now, these are your business model itself, your operational management, your technology, your reputation management, and your organizational resilience. It doesn't matter the size of your business, even small ones like us at BizVision can use this framework. More information at bizvision.co.uk with our Wise Supplier and Today's Leader programs. Now, the way it's all right having this resilience planning, but the key is in embedding it. So where should you start? Well, quite simply, with your team or yourself. But if it's just you, try to get a friendly critic, we call it soundboard at BizVision, to help you. And you start off in a brainstorming or blue sky, whatever you want to call it. And the first question is, how resilient are we today? Now, you have to be really truthful and penetrating here. And then you need to drill down into your resilience across the six perspectives I gave you before. Don't think this is fanciful work. It's work that today's leaders who want to be around tomorrow are starting to do now. And it's certainly work you need to do before you get gaga about Brexit opportunity. So that's Malcolm's monologue, and now for the rest of the show. In these challenging times of the 2020s, you need to know what's happening in the world of business. Hughes News, written and presented by Hugh Morgan Williams, brings you your essential news digest.
This week, the PM hails a tariff-free trade deal with Australia, but British farmers cry foul. The EU delays an end to quarantine and tests for UK citizens. Britain's threatened to take drastic action over the post-Brexit agreement in Northern Ireland, and a French trawler's intercepted for operating illegally in Jersey waters. The Prime Minister has hailed as a massive opportunity a tariff-free trade deal with Australia, despite the deep reservations of some ministers and the UK farming lobby. Boris Johnson's expected to discuss plans to give Australian food exporters the same deal is that enjoyed by the EU. The plan's being resisted by farming groups, which say it would set a dangerous precedent for future trade deals and could result in British farmers struggling to compete with cheap imports. The farmers are backed by Environment Secretary George Eustace and Michael Gove, whilst the PM and Trade Secretary Liz Truss are hoping a deal can be completed before the G7 summit next month in Cornwall, to which Australia is being invited. At present, Australia pays a tariff of 20% on its beef, which would be phased out over 15 years. The EU is set to delay a decision to ease entry restrictions for Britons because of fears relating to the Indian variant of COVID. The decision to add Britain to the safe travel list had been expected, but there are growing fears on the rise of the Indian variant. Britain's threatened to take drastic action over the post-Brexit agreement on Northern Ireland after concerns over violence and disruption. Ministers are prepared to extend the grace period for meat products entering Northern Ireland to avoid a cliff edge at the end of next month. The government is said to be also considering triggering Article 16 to suspend checks entirely. Meanwhile, Lord Frost says the EU is dictating which new cancer drugs can be provided to patients in Northern Ireland. He says medicine availability in the province was one of the most difficult and significant issues the two sides were discussing. The row over fishing in the Channel erupted again this week when a French trawler was intercepted, allegedly operating illegally in the island's waters. A maritime patrol vessel was dispatched when the trawler was spotted in a protected bream spawning ground. Local Jersey fishermen also attempted to stop the French boat. The French skipper said he had permission from the French authorities, but this did not accord with the Jersey view. JCB owner Lord Bamford continues to snub the business lobbying group, the CBI, after overtures from its new director general to rejoin the organisation. Lord Bamford said the CBI continued to be a completely anti-Brexit organisation and it wasn't looking after British interests. Finally, the owners of Eurostar have agreed a £250 million bailout with shareholders to ensure trains keep running. The company has just run one service a day to its main destinations, Paris, Amsterdam and Brussels, during the pandemic. Of the £250 million, £50 is coming from shareholders and the balance from secured loans and overdrafts from its bankers. The company's managing director is urging governments to ease travel restrictions to help traffic grow.
It's time for business in the UK to move forward, to see and seize new opportunities. Welcome to Call to Action with Malcolm Gallagher. Strategies, tactics and ideas for you to move beyond Brexit. Hello, it's Malcolm Gallagher with Call to Action. In my own way, in the introduction, I tried to tease you with a five-letter word. And so let's go straight to it. The word is trust. Now more than ever, it's a word that, as one of my guests, David Horsager of The Trust Edge, says, that without trust, people and organisations fail. is a brilliant book out called Trusted Leader, The Eight Pillars That Drive Results. And David says that without trust, transactions cannot happen. That means without trust, your buyers are not going to buy from you. Without trust, leaders lose their people. And that certainly happened after the pandemic, with one in four UK workers looking to leave because they lost trust in their leader during the pandemic. And without trust, influence is destroyed, and that's reputation. As David says, trust can be either your most vulnerable weakness or your greatest asset. I've interviewed David for BizVision TV twice, and you can watch both interviews at bizvision.co.uk. But coming up now is the audio from my first interview with David. Check out your thinking on trust. Welcome, I'm your host Malcolm Gallagher. From our BizVision studios in the UK, you're watching the BVTV network. Now, in my mind, when a buyer is considering giving you the order, they're not thinking, can I afford this? They're thinking, can I trust you? When a business leader is considering promoting a team member, he or she is not thinking about salary or what others may think about the promotion. Instead, thoughts go to, can I trust this person to do the job well? At BizVision, we're proud that we're trusted, proud of our culture of trust. After all, our guests are trusting that we will behave professionally in any interview with them and to them. My guest today has written a book that, trust me, is on my bedside table as I devour its content. It's called Trusted Leader, Eight Pillars That Drive Results, and it's by David Horsager. David, welcome.
Thank you so much. Great to be here, Malcolm. Cross the water.
Yeah, cross the... Well, we're socially distant, that's for certain. Yeah. Aren't we? I'm in sunny Northumberland in the northeast of England, and you are where?
I'm in Minnesota, White Bear Lake, Minnesota, and we both live, even though I'm toward the Twin Cities of Minneapolis-St. Paul, my office is today, I live out a little bit with a little more countryside, and you're socially distanced, I hear, anyway, from everybody, even in the UK.
Yeah, I like it that way. I like it that way. You know, I don't get into trouble, you know.
That's right.
Yeah. Now, look, I've got to tell you that this book, David, and I'm not never supposed to do it. I've been told off time and time again, but don't let an author see that you put a sticky note in inside.
You know? I love it. Write on it.
I love this bit, though. Clarity. People trust the clear and mistrust the ambiguous. Could you send that to about 3 million IT people, please. We've got their website so ambiguous at the beginning. I have not the foggiest at times.
Absolutely. We don't, I mean, you know, the leader that's clear about the vision, we tend to trust. The salesperson that's clear, the salesperson that's, you know, a lot of them are so clear about how cool they are and how long they've been in business, but they're not clear about the product. Yeah. It's this, you know, so then we don't buy it. Or the teacher is a good teacher, but the teacher's not clear about the assignment, so the kids go home frustrated. It's a clarity issue.
I'm totally with you. I'll be chatting to viewers and listeners. I'll be chatting to David in three parts. First, I'll ask him, and I'm keeping this clear, by the way. First, I'll ask him, what is trust and why is it important? In part two, I'll ask him about how you can quickly show your trustworthiness. And in part three, I'll ask him how to keep building on trust. So, hope that's clear. But David, before we get started in my three parts, I have to say, I love the style of this book. I really do love the style of the book, the layout, and it's easy reading. It really is. So please tell us briefly, who is David Horsager and why your passion for trust? Oh, and what will the book do for a leader?
Sure. Well, that's a lot of questions in one.
Yeah, I know.
But I'm David.
I'm getting my money's worth.
That's right. I'm the CEO of Trust Edge Leadership Institute. We're probably one of the most researched on trust and leadership, at least out of North America. We put out an annual study. I started my grad work on trust in business and leadership a couple decades ago almost. And very few people in business and leadership were looking at trust this research-based way back then. Now, many people, it's kind of come into vogue about trust, but it was, you know, my first book, Trust Edge, and then Daily Edge, and now Trust the Leader. But I'm a father, and but as far as this work goes, I'm passionate about it. We've seen change. We've worked on six continents. We've seen transformation, and I guess why am I passionate about it? That research showed some things that were interesting. I kind of had this epiphany about trust, like, oh, it's not a leadership issue. It's not this. That's a trust issue. That led to the research we started using in companies. That made me passionate because we saw change, and then really over time it changed me. My parenting, my way as a leader. So I think why trust, if that was the second little question there, basically what we kept seeing in the original research is trust was always the leading indicator and the root issue, and most people are not solving it. So as an example, people say, I've got a leadership issue. They never do. The reason you follow a leader or not is based on trust, unless it's a dictator. You people say, we have a sales issue. Turns out they never do. The way, unless it's a commodity, the only way I increase sales is trust in something, trust in the salesperson or the product or the service. People say, how do I amplify a marketing message? It turns out there's only one way to amplify a marketing message, and that's increased trust in the message. How do I get more innovation? Same thing. How do I get more innovation? The only way to increase innovation is increased trust in the team. Or the diversity issues of our day. The biggest Harvard study shows diversity on its own pits people against each other, or can, unless you increase trust. Then we get the benefits of diversity, inclusion, and equity. So we have to deal with this issue. And the reason I wrote Trusted Leader is people were not seeing it as the root issue, and they didn't see a way forward. They thought, oh, trust is either something you have or you don't. And in the research, of course, it kept coming back. The number one reason people wanted to work for an organization is trusted leadership over more pay. So we had to deal with this trust issue. And when we did that, when we deal with the root issue, we started to solve, you know, for the real outcomes, the lagging indicators of more retention, more sales, more engagement, speed, learning, all those things.
Yeah. Now, I have to tell you something, but I don't want you to charge me for it. But yesterday, my wife reopened her Victorian tea shop in the little lovely little county town we live here there. And, you know, it's been obviously shut for a year. And we were talking about what she was going to get the messages out and everything. And I said, you know, I've just been reading David's book, and I think what we've got to focus upon is making sure that people understand and can trust that you've made the place COVID safe.
That's true.
And you know what? She had a brilliant day yesterday.
Well, I would love to bring my wife. We need to come over, and yeah. I have another invite to the UK in September, but I don't know that one will happen. I know I have to be in, I think my first international trip is Vienna if things open up right, but boy, I would love this. My wife especially would love to stop by for tea at the tea shop.
It's a Victorian one, yes. And now, David, let's get on with part one. And I know this sounds a silly question, but what is trust? And why is it so important for a leader to be trusted, but especially in this new and altered business world?
First of all, what is it? It turns out it's a little more complex than we might think. It's a good question because we can think we know it all about trust. We think, oh, it takes a long time to build trust. Well, that's not true a lot of the time. It might, but in a moment of crisis, complete strangers trust each other like that if they're running the same direction. We can think, ooh, confidence is trusted, but if that turns to arrogance, that's usually not. We can think, extend more trust to my team until I extend too much. Or we can think, here's a good one, business word of the decade. Trust is vulnerability and transparency. Well, that can be valuable, and I can tell you the research on that. However, some of your kids are so transparent on social media, I don't trust them for a second.
Yes.
Because confidentiality is also trusted. So a trusted leader has to be as transparent as they can while being as confidential as they ought. So we define it, the simple definition for us is trust is a confident belief in a person, a product, or an organization, a confident belief. In our way, it's to do what's right, to deliver what they expect, but it's this confident. When I have a confident belief in you, everything changes. In fact, if I showed the viewers, the interesting part of this research, if you're watching this, is on page 20 of the first book, and actually is in Trusted Leader also, but what happened was, when trust increased, when trust increased, output, morale, retention, productivity, innovation, loyalty went up. So it was the leading indicator in the root issue. When people want to solve things, people say, we'll get into the pillars in a little bit, and I'll show you how it is never, at the core, an engagement issue. It's never a communication issue, ever. People think it is. It's never a net promoter score or referral issue. No, it's always a trust issue. So when they solve for that, so, I mean, in the basic question, it's a confident belief in, but when I can gain a confident belief in you, speed changes. I just, boom. Let's think about it simply. When I used to say often, a lack of trust is your biggest expense, okay? Mm. So in a simple form here, take a lock, right? That's a good example of a lack of trust because the only reason a lock exists is because I don't trust you, okay?
Yeah.
So what's the cost? Well, money, I've got to buy the lock. But the big cost is time. Now I got to open it every time I go through the gate. Mm. So I just had two big costs. Or text someone you trust. Boop, it's done. Now text someone you don't trust. Oh, how are they going to take that? Ooh, how are they going to delete? Ooh, how are they going to takes forever more. So there's always a cost. And that's why a team that doesn't trust each other won't share ideas. They don't innovate. When we increase trust in a team just a little bit, performance goes up, ideas go up, innovation goes up. So so that's a bit of the what and why. It's not the way, but that's a bit of the passion for it. And we've used this work in corruption issues in East Africa. We've used it in government issues. We've used it in sometimes people jokingly introduce me. They say, and he's even spoken to the U.S. Congress on trust. Obviously, he's not very good.
I love it. David, before we move to part two, I'd just like to remind viewers and listeners of your website URL, which is, and you viewers, you can see it on the screen behind me, trustedge.com. So listeners, that's trustedge.com. Now, another one to pop along to have a look at, another website is even easier to do, understand. It's davidhorsager.com. And viewers, you can see the name, davidhorsager.com. Listeners, I'll just spell that out for you. David, and then Horsager, HORSAGER.com. Now, just let me remind everyone about the book. It's called Trusted Leader, 8 Pillars That Drive Results. As I say, it's a rewarding book to read. I'm enjoying it, but it's in two parts, which is fascinating because one, it's a story at the beginning, and then it's the pillars at the end. It really is very, very good indeed. David, time for part two. Now, trust comes in different ways, doesn't it? I was talking to a client in engineering, and we were talking about a number of issues that he had. And basically, he was feeling that his people weren't getting behind him. And what really I felt was that they don't trust him. I don't mean trust from the fact they would steal from them, but trust to keep on the same direction, to keep going the same way without disappearing everything. So I get it that people at first don't trust someone. In many ways, it's only natural in today's world where phone, text, email, web, video, their own hidden agendas, you know, can easily be misled. I know that when someone says, trust me, that means far from the truth to me. But increasingly, we're asking people to trust our leaders. How can someone quickly and effectively show that they are a trustworthy leader?
Well, that is a great question. And here's the challenge. There were 8 traits that came out of the research. You've seen them in the book, the 8 pillar framework that was just revalidated again by an outside university as the way trust is built globally. So I know people want, you know, three points in a poem in a speech, but the problem is when 8 come out of research and you're talking about trust and they're relatively co-equal, you kind of have to share them all. Now, the other thing is I can speak about each of these all day long. Yeah. So for context, I think to be fair, We can't assume we're going to know everything after this next 3 minutes, but to be fair, I have to share them all because it matters. So how a person, like that person, might rebuild trust quickly might be different. And after that, I can say, well, what this person might do to do it the fastest, but you kind of need to know the eight. Is that okay?
Yeah, great. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to give the eight just for context. Remember, there's a whole lot of research and everything to this. And by the way, they are noted by C words, but that doesn't mean there's some kind of cheesy motivational idea. They stand for research funnels that actually impact trust. So you'll see what I mean.
Yeah. I'm going to ask in part three, by the way, for you to pick three of the eight that we can deepen.
And we can take some ideas. So I won't give you until part three some of the tips and takeaways, but for context, I'll give you the eight because this is the thing. You can have this language. If you have this language of these eight, you can actually solve the real issue. And I will argue, without ego, and this guy from America, all those consultants that think they know everything, I'm not that, but I do believe you can solve every organizational and leadership issue against these eight. I'm not saying I'm perfect at it. I'm not saying it's easy. I'm not saying we don't have to contextualize when we're doing work in Indonesia or Uganda. I am saying if you can define it by these eight, you actually solve the real issue. And frankly, most leaders and organizations are not solving the real issue. So here's how you build trust. Eight pillars.
Are you right? Just a minute. Get the viewers to get a pencil and listeners to get a pencil. Mm-hmm. Yeah? You've got 10 seconds to get the pencil. Are you ready? Go, David.
Okay. So these eight, when you have your pencil, write them down and put them by your desk because you'll start to notice – oh, that's the issue. It's not a communication issue. Oh, that's the issue. So here we go. Number one, clarity. Like you said already, Malcolm, people trust the clear and they mistrust or distrust the ambiguous or the overly complex.
Yep.
Whenever you overcomplexify something beyond what is needed, you lose clarity, which loses trust. When I was a professor, we had plenty of them that tried to look smart, overcomplexify. They lost trust, right? Mm-hmm. So number one is clarity. Number two is compassion. We learn that we trust people that care beyond themselves. If I don't feel like you care about me or at least something beyond yourself, I'll have a hard time being accountable to you or following you. That's what we found from the research. Number three is character. We trust those that do what's right over what's easy. This is not as simple as honesty, and it's certainly not as simple as integrity. Mm-hmm. It's more. But this one, maybe one question you would ask in companies would be, is there any way we're incentivizing against the character we say we want to have? We had a big bank in the U.S. that was totally incentivizing salespeople against the character they said they want to have, and it cost them billions of dollars. So people that think, oh, character, of course, character. No, the bribery issues in East Africa, until we change the incentives, we're not going to start having less bribery, as an example.
Yeah.
Number four is competency. Mm. I might trust Malcolm to take my kids to the ball game because he has compassion and he has character. That does not mean I will trust Malcolm to give me a root canal.
Yeah, I wouldn't either.
There you go. Because you have to be competent. So if you're a leader, salesperson, or something, you have to stay fresh and relevant and capable. This is what you're such a great example of. 500 books in. I mean, people are learning. You're learning. You're actually this idea of staying fresh and relevant and capable. Mm. If you're leading the way you were 10 years ago, I don't trust you. You got to stay fresh and relevant and capable. Next pillar is commitment. What we found is people trust those that stay committed, even in the face of adversity. And you can simply think of anyone in your life or in history that's left a legacy beyond themselves. Maybe it's your mom or dad or first grade teacher or Mandela or Martin Luther King or Gandhi or Jesus or Joan of Arc. And you'll find somebody that's left a legacy beyond themselves because they were committed to something beyond themselves. We want to know if you're committed to this. Mm. The next pillar is connection. And really a lot of what came out of this pillar was this willingness to collaborate with others. If I go into a company, each of these pillars has counterforces. So if I see siloing, you call it that in the UK?
Yes, yeah, I'm with you.
If I see an unwillingness to share budget here or for the best of all, I know I've got a connection problem in this organization. The next pillar is contribution. And really, the key words that came out of this research funnel were results, performance, outcomes. You've got to contribute results to be trusted. So you can't just have compassion and character and not contribute the results I expected or asked for. You've got to contribute. But you also can't just contribute results without compassion or character, we found, and companies would die that way also. So you had to have all eight.
Yeah.
The final pillar, and we call it the queen and the king of the pillars, and that is consistency. Sameness is trusted for good or bad. If you're late all the time, I will in fact trust you to be late. So we have to. So now, maybe just for a minute, just context. These eight, I believe, and the research shows, and all the data on each one of them, you can solve every organizational leadership issue against these eight. Now, I said before, it's not an engagement issue. It's not. The only way to increase engagement is increased trust, one or more of these. The only way to increase a net promoter score or referrals is actually increased trust. Communication. David, you like C words. Isn't it ever a communication issue? Never. People say communication tritely and actually well-meaning. The problem is communication is happening all the time. Clear communication is trusted. Unclear communication is consistent is inconsistent. High character is low character is. Compassionate communication is trusted, hateful communication isn't. So if we can define against these, we actually solve the real issue and they work together. So you could even say, we've got a clear vision, I've got that clarity pillar. If you're not sharing it every 2 weeks consistently, using the consistency pillar, you just lost clarity. Yeah. I've got commitment. If you don't show compassion, people aren't going to be committed. So there's a little quick context.
Brilliant, absolutely brilliant. I was just thinking of another C, by the way, there. The people keep saying, oh, this is the way forward, you know, collaboration. Well, yeah. Collaboration, you don't trust somebody, ain't going to work, is it?
Yeah, that's right.
Now for part three, David. It seems to me that trust is like the sand running out in a timer. It quickly disappears. I guess a leader keeps needing to renew it. You've got those eight pillars, which everyone will get when they buy your book, obviously. Can you pick three of the eight to tell us to focus on now so to stop losing the trust of others?
So that's a really good one, that idea. Let's start with clarity. I want to give a couple ideas very quickly here because the thing is character, commitment, those are hard to build. They take a little more time. You can do something about clarity and see results in 2 weeks. I'm going to give one idea. There are many ideas. Here's the good, I think what we hear about our work that's different. We don't want to be just motivational. We want to be research-based, but we need to be able to use it tomorrow morning. I'm a farm boy. If you couldn't use that shovel to scoop, then it wasn't a good shovel. I got to use this research. I want applied research. I want stuff I can use tomorrow morning. So let me give a couple ideas then. Under clarity, there are many simple takeaways we give. One idea is this. The three most important questions that actually take an idea to an action. They're not what you might think. You might be thinking, oh, the most important strategic questions, the why is important, right? I've heard Simon Sinek, I've heard others. The why is important for purpose, and I won't last 10 days on a project if I don't have a why, but it is not the most important question that takes an idea to an action. Well, what about Colin's work and the who, having the right who's on the bus? Here's the problem, it's good work, but I see buses full of great who's singing about their why, kumbaya, right off the cliff.
Yeah.
And the problem is they don't have hope because they're not taking an idea to an action. And the problem is one of the reasons is they're not clear enough about what they can do tomorrow morning. So here are the three most important questions that actually take an idea to an action, the three most important strategic questions. Number one, how? Number two is way more important. How? And number three is the most important of all. It is how. So if you could, this might seem simple. I'll tell you what, it's not. I've worked with global governments on this project. We got 52 goals and 49 rocks and 30. If you can get good at this process, you can actually get clarity that leads to results. I'm going to show you how I've used this process to triple. People have used it to triple sales. This is how I lost 52 pounds in 5 months, 10 years ago.
Oh.
This process. So the question is, you have to ask how until you can do something today or tomorrow. And you always can. With the biggest problems in the world, you don't solve everything, but you can always get to a how. And most people stop too early. So let's take the second biggest healthcare organization in North America. I'm in a private meeting with the CEO and senior leaders. And I said, what do you really need to do? We've done all this trust work. We've showed you this trust work. What do you want to change? The CEO stood up. He said, David, we're losing HCAP funding. We're losing patients. We are losing. We just need a better culture. I said, great. How are you going to start to have a better culture? He said, talked to his little team, stood up, said, we think we'll start with clarity where you started. I said, great. How are you going to start to be more clear? He sat down, talked to his team, stood up, said, we're going to hold people accountable. Do I believe him? Not for a second. People have value of accountability, and they don't know what they mean. I said, how do you hold people accountable here? Accountability yeah. stuff? They don't know. I asked how seven more times, and that senior leader came to an idea he could apply today or tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Doesn't solve everything. It just starts momentum.
Yeah.
Everybody, we did the same thing. How? When I did the weight thing, I thought, okay, I asked people around the world that travel like I travel a couple hundred times a year, all this stuff. I said, how do you stay fit on the road? They said the same things around the world. Eat less, exercise more. That's not clear enough for me. So I need to take in less calories. How am I going to do that? Finally, a doctor, fit as could be, 80 years old, said to me after an event, he was on the left side of the stage. I still remember. He said, here's one idea, David. It won't be everything for you, but in America, most men would lose 30 to 50 pounds in a year if they didn't drink a calorie. They could eat exactly the same. Now, this won't work for the pubs in the UK probably, but anyway, well, I have no...
They're closed.
Yeah, exactly. I don't have a legalism about alcohol or anything, but I thought, I think I could do this. And one of my problems was, here was a final how. I grew up in the poorest county in Minnesota. We did not get to have a can of soda. A can, that was the rich kids. That was so special. When I started flying, every time the steward or stewardess would come by, oh yeah, I'll have a can of Coke. I mean, yeah. I didn't get to have that as a kid. So it became a big deal. So pretty soon I'm having two Cokes, three Cokes on a plane, which is bad calories, and it's, you know, 1,000 over, you know, over several cans, right?
Yeah.
So my one final how was, I'm not going to drink a calorie on the plane. One of them. Now, I had others, but one of them. And so I just automatically, if you sit next to me on the plane next week, you'll see I don't order, I'll order something, a Fresca, a water, a coffee, but not something with calories on the plane. So it was clear enough I could apply it today or tomorrow. And that's in teams, your final how must include the who, when, and where. So when it's me, not doing a calorie, that's me. But you have to have a final who. People that say co-leadership's terrible. The data says if you have more than one person on a final task, you have 50% less chance of it ever getting done.
Yeah.
Collaborate, but co-leadership on anything. People say, well, I know this one company that has a co-CEOs. The only reason it works in any example is if those co-CEOs have absolutely separate areas of accountability and responsibility.
Yeah.
It's got to be clear. A final person, a final when, a final who. And we can always get to a win starting tomorrow morning. So this how process, if you want to see a video on it for free, go to trustedge.com. You'll read a little bit more about the book, but it's a powerful process under clarity. Now, I grabbed a lot of time for one idea. So do you want me to touch on another pillar or still two?
I'm going to ask, would you come back again? Fake and misleading news exists, and it can be dangerous for you. Get a true view of the news with Hugh's View from Hugh Morgan Williams. Often prickly, but always insightful.
The row over what should or shouldn't be in a trade deal matters. British farmers are concerned that if Australian farmers get unfettered access to UK markets, they'll be under severe cost pressure. It's true that Australian farmers operate on a far bigger scale than British ones, but we also need to remember that Australia's principal market for meat is China and Southeast Asia, and that shipments to the UK would have to come in frozen form, suitable really only for the mass catering markets, not high street butchers or the restaurant trade. The government's already promised to preserve welfare standards, and there would be much to win from a free trade deal. Farmers here should perhaps concentrate and producing a premium product at a premium price. If they continue to do that, they should have little to fear. This trade deal might become a template for others, but each one must be done on its own merits, and British farmers should not be sold down the river to satisfy international trading conglomerates.
Thanks you for that great view. And thank you for listening to BrexitWise, episode 138. I hope you've found a lot of value in it and that you'll take notice of those two words I've been using today, resilience and trust. See you next episode.